Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator Podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
There's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast one. Holy cow.
Welcome to the 10th installment of Red Bearded Weekly here this week. We are going to go down and dirty with whitetails. What I mean by that is we're going to totally geek out on whitetails. So hopefully I have some people on tonight that I can discuss some whitetail strategy with. We're going to be talking about farm country strategy here tonight. It's going to be a good topic, good discussion here of how crops can really affect buck bedding. That's what we're going to get into here tonight. First of all, I did want to recap my brother's turkey hunt. I was hoping he would come on this week's episode and discuss his first ever turkey hunt, but unfortunately, he declined. Which is cool because he's not very social. This hunt took place in northeastern Wisconsin. We try to keep it within 45 minutes to an hour radius of Green Bay. We're hunting all public land, no private. And the first night I went up, I tried to roost some birds. This was the Friday of season C. I ended up roosting a bird, but I was competing with a farm dog, so I really couldn't hear where the birds were roosted. I did hear one gobble. It sounded close, but come to find out in the morning when we tried setting up on this bird, his gobbles were coming from a long distance away, so unfortunately that did not work out for my little brother. And We didn't lose a lot of time at that spot. I think we spent like an hour there, if that, set up on that bird. So we just knew chances weren't very high just because I didn't know the exact location due to that farm dog barking. So we decided to cut bait and move on to a different location. So we basically hopped from local public land spots, and believe it or not, we found a bunch of turkeys adjacent to public feeding in a private field, but the public was right next door and we could see that field from public, and there was a field on public actually. And funny thing is, it was heavily trafficked county road, so we were kind of surprised that birds were there. I believe that there's three toms, one Jake, and several different hens, which kind of surprised us. The birds were all flocked up, which was surprising to me because down in southwestern Wisconsin, they have been split up for a while now. And even northern Wisconsin, I got reports that birds are split up. But for some reason, by the lake, it typically is 10 to 15 degrees cooler by the lake, those birds were still flocked up. So maybe that's something to consider. If you're hunting some lakeshore counties, birds might be a little bit behind. I didn't think of that until the other day. So we found those birds. We ended up walking the field edge where they couldn't see us. There was a timber stand. And we had a Jake decoy and a hen decoy that I was able to crawl out and set up. Unfortunately, most of the birds had left the field by the time we had got there. There was one tom right on the edge. Unfortunately, my calling and the decoys just did not bring them in. And that kind of was summed up that hunt. And continuing throughout the day, we decided to move on and try and locate some more birds, which we were actually able to do. We ended up heading even more towards Lake Michigan. Found another flock of birds. We went on to another piece of public. We just got to a high point that could overlook, and the turkeys could hear anything that we called up on that ridgetop down in the river bottom, because it was a ridge overlooking the river bottom. And I made just some locator yelps, really loud, really obnoxious, just trying to get a gobble. And we got another gobble. I mean, couldn't ask for much more. We decided to head in that direction. We set up on a ridge system. And wouldn't you know it, about after 10 minutes of sitting there, throwing a couple of yelps off this ridge, we had another flock of birds come through. Unfortunately, this time, we set up too high on the ridge. There was a bench down below that we probably should have set up on, but we set up about 20 yards too high, unfortunately. So Jack, they were just out of range for Jack again, and those birds cut through. So I was like, Jack, we could probably flank those birds. I wasn't sure if we were quick enough, because we're kind of slow. But we ended up getting ahead of those birds, coming to look at the video later, and we did flank them. We went to the field that they were going to go to, because there was actually a pinch point that we felt like those birds were going to follow to that field. They ended up getting to that field. They actually were walking a snowmobile trail, and I made some yelps, and I cut it at them, and they weren't very vocal birds, but looking back in the video, they had some soft yelps, and they actually got about 125 yards away working towards Jack and I, and they got to about 55-60 yards. Jack spotted them after they were there for about 5 minutes or so, and they ended up starting to cut towards us. And wouldn't you know it, since we are hunting public land, we actually had some hikers and some mushroom hunters hiking that snowmobile trail as those birds were making a beeline towards Jack. And unfortunately, everything happened at the same time. Those mushroom hunters came through. Those birds were at the snowmobile trail. They were heading towards us. And unfortunately, those mushroom hunters blew that hunt because the birds got spooked. Jack said, I was calling and they were cutting right towards them. They probably would have got within shooting range, unfortunately. I mean, they were at 55 and close to the distance slowly. They were feeding in that field. And that's the way things go sometimes. So we went to the next day. We knew that there was that good flock of birds adjacent to public. We ended up going back to that field. And we set up a decoy of a Jake and a hen. And we had a blind, actually, this time. So we set up behind some trees and some brush. And we had birds come into the field right away in the morning. Probably about 6 o'clock or so. And I tried calling the decoys. They could see the decoys. I think those birds have been hunted in that spot before, and they're probably heavily pressured birds, even though they're next to the road, and they weren't coming to anything that we threw at them. We even had Jack go out in the field with a Reaper decoy, and those birds did not like that. They went right back into the timber. So it seemed like those birds were on a pattern. Go feed out in that field and go through the pecking order for that day, then go right into the timber, because that's what they did 2 days in a row, unfortunately. Pretty much Jack was just tired after that hunt on Sunday, so we decided to wrap up his first turkey hunt ever on that day. The feedback I got from him is that he wants to do it again next year. He is good for about a day and a morning, and that's about it, which I don't blame him, because the way I hunt is run and gun style, so we put on about 8-9 miles in the weekend, so I kept him moving. So we'll say I pretty much tired the kid out. So I think he enjoyed it. Like I said, we are gonna get into farm country whitetail hunting tonight. I'm really passionate about whitetails. That's kind of my MO. Bud has his walleyes. Andy has his waterfowl. Man, I love my whitetails. So we're going to get into this family farm that I hunted. Actually, my uncle's farm that we're going to be talking about here tonight. All right. So this is his farm right here. It's a square box right here. I'll get the graphics pulled up. And if you guys have any questions as we go along here, I know the podcast listeners really can't participate in this, but that's the way it goes. Just describe the farm here. It's rectangular in shape. It has a creek system to the north, has kind of a marshy area to the southeast, along with a fence row coming out of that marsh to the north and to the west. There's a small block of timber to the southwest. It's kind of shaped like Wisconsin. I'd say the farm is about 80% crops, and between that creek bottom, that little block of timber, and that little marsh, about 80 or 20% made up of that. And we're just going to get into the details of this farm that I've learned a lot of different things off this farm over the past several years. And a lot of the tips and tactics that Dan Infault talks about on his farm bedding DVDs apply a lot, I will say that. However, it still goes, you need to put boots on the ground to figure out the intimate details of a farm. So, on this farm, when we originally started hunting it, we didn't understand bedding at all, unfortunately. We just hunt that creek bottom funnel, and we just pretty much set up tree stands anywhere in these hardwoods along trails. However, over the past 5-6 years that we've been hunting this farm, we've been understanding the bedding a lot more intimately. For my podcast listeners, like everything goes in the whitetail world, everything on this farm relates to edge and elevation. On this farm, we have how many different buck bedding areas? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Interesting enough, on this farm, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 of the beds are right along the fence rows, and the other 4 are in edges of the most diverse cover on the property, which is interesting. And this farm is very dependent on crop rotation. Just want to say, for instance, on this farm, if we have, there's fields all surrounding all these fence rows. For instance, if we have a crop field that's planted in corn to the south, it seems like the bucks bed along that fence row from having that corn to their back and looking toward the open field to the north. And another example of this, there's a crop field to the west, and when that's planted in corn, the bucks have their back to that corn and they face the open field to the east. Then another instance of how crops, if there's corn right in the center of this property, they can bed anywhere along the fence row on that property, facing outwardly to wherever there is shorter crops, so they can keep so they could have really good visual bedding. Hopefully that makes sense to everyone. And another thing that we've learned hunting this property, along those fence rows, they like to bed on the highest spots and the lowest spots. And I know I've seen that on Dan Infault's farm bedding, and it does hold true for this property. I'm in the low spots, deer will bed there. On the high spots, deer will bed there. However, I have found spots that have set up almost like hill country as well. Even these small little ridge systems, these ridges on this farm, it's pretty flat ground, are 10 feet high maybe, and they use those just like hill country. They bed right on that top one-third to get that thermal tunnel going. So just very interesting how each strategy, whether it's hill country, open country, farm country, they all intertwine with each other. And I think one of the most surprising things about this farm is how much bedding there really is based off of not very much cover on the farm. There's not a lot of thickets or anything like that. Fairly open hardwoods in spots. But I'd say just those little fence row thickets and that the creek bottom thickets are the key to this farm, where the bedding is. And obviously, for all my podcast listeners, they do run this river bottom during the rut. There is two pockets of doe bedding on the river bottom that those bucks cruise downwind of, and they connect up with other farms. There is doe bedding in the complete southwest corner of this farm where does, and during the rut, bucks will actually bed on higher ground facing that doe bedding, which was super interesting for those bucks to keep tabs on the doe. I think most of those fence row beds are earlier in the season. I don't think those are rut bedding because there's not a lot of rut sign. Most of the buck bedding that is rut seems to be in those hardwoods right next to doe bedding, because that's where the majority of the rubs have been, which has been fairly interesting. I think the biggest thing that we learned this past off season, I was just out there hanging stands, is this bedding area right here. So just for all my podcast listeners, the way this bedding set up, it's a very tiny pinch point on this farm. You can't even, I didn't even notice it till my dad and I scouted it over this past weekend. So there's a bunch of marsh grass in part of this creek bottom, and there's a pocket of just thick, dense cover. It's probably about maybe 5 to 10 feet wide, running from north to south, and not very long or anything like that. And wouldn't you know it, we found a shed just outside of that bedding area, and we found this bed just worn down to the dirt. And I feel like it's rut bedding because it's right next to doe bedding again, and there's rubs facing away from this bedding area in both directions. And it's super interesting how this bedding area sets up, because when this buck gets out of his bedding area, he goes down to the lowest point on these farms. He goes right to the creek, because any stand that is set up on this small little ridge system, at night he can smell everything coming down. So I was telling my dad, he's going to have to hunt it on an off wind where the wind is strong enough so his thermals don't get sucked down to that buck in the evening or in the morning. So super interesting. And this buck is actually staring. There's actually a house right next to this bedding area, and this buck is actually watching that house. Super interesting, because his bed's facing right at that house. The next set of beds I think is rut bedding too, because it's adjacent to doe bedding as well, would be more of a hill country, even though these ridges are only about 10 feet tall. It has perfect cover to the back, has a wind tunnel effect, and they can monitor the does in that location. And as we worked toward the east here, this is all fence row bedding, so that depends on the crop. If there's corn directly in the center of this property and we have a west wind, all these bucks will bed facing along the corn, facing toward the east. Then as we work along here, this fence row to the south end is actually one of the highest points on the farm, and there is a buck bedding area right on top of that, staring at the farm completely. So when the crops are short and there's corn to that south, they can see everything coming in and out of that farm. Makes complete sense. Then as we work our way towards that block of timber, I feel like this is another rut bedding spot, because there's doe bedding to the extreme south part, and there's actually a little cedar thicket. I don't think they bed in those cedars all the time, just because there's not a lot of nutritional value and there's not a lot of cover in those cedars. However, all these buck beds were looking right at this doe bedding. So I think those does are bedding to the north of that doe bedding and staring south, just monitoring when does are coming through. So I just thought that was interesting how bucks use this property and how crop rotation can really affect it. And I've been learning this farm. I feel like we're starting to get it really down pat. It seems like when corn is on this property, it can be good at all times of year, but it seems like last year there was just grass on this property, and unfortunately it didn't hold any. There was one mature buck out there, but he was just around during rut basically, and that was it. But I feel like this year, if this dry trend continues, we actually have alfalfa in the center of this, and there's actually corn in this west field over here, and I believe it's alfalfa to the south. I think those bucks are gonna stack up along this fence that is along that west crop field, staring to the east, and will be coming to that alfalfa field to feed if it continues to be dry in Wisconsin like it has been over the past, I'd say, 6 months or so. So that's going to be a huge magnet for those bucks and does this early season, I think, for my dad. And I think he's going to have a really good opportunity. I feel now that we're understanding this property more and more as the year goes, I feel like we've made minor stand adjustments. For instance, we talked about those thermals. Me and my dad actually moved the stand more north to get my dad out of those thermals dropping down at night and even in the morning. And he's high enough to where midday the day wind should take his scent towards the road. I know this is hard to see or visualize for my podcast listeners, but I guess the big takeaway for the people listening on podcast is, when you're in farm country, pay attention to crop rotation, especially in fairly flat country that I'm using as an example here tonight. Does anybody have any questions out there? I'm not sure if anybody's watching or anything like that. I'm always open to answer any questions you have about this farm bedding situation. And if we don't have questions, that's cool too. Appreciate you guys tuning in and watching this podcast. If you guys have any questions about farm country that you're hunting or need any advice, send me the map. I got enough properties that you don't got to be worried about me getting on your ground or anything like that. But if you guys need any tips or advice on how to set up bucks, or wondering how bucks are bedding on the farm that you are hunting, I'm always open to talking with people out there and bounce ideas off each other. I love sharing ideas with people. I love learning from people. That's the reason we do this podcast, is not only to learn between me, Bud, and Andy, but learn with our audience as well. So, and if you're just watching the podcast or listening to the podcast version here, just so you guys have a better visual representation, come on this video and you can actually see how the farm lays out and how the bedding lays out, because I have it highlighted on this map fairly well, so you guys can actually see how bucks and how does use this property. And I just feel like it's a beneficial discussion to have. And if you guys have any questions after we get done here, put those in the comments and I'll answer them to the best of my ability. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, and go ahead and check us out on all of our social media channels here, our pages. We got Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. YouTube's our big thing. If you have friends that are looking for whitetail advice or waterfowl or walleye advice, this is a good resource, I believe. I believe that we've grown over the past 3 years, and we've been taking a lot of pride in what we're doing and what we're putting out here. And hopefully you guys enjoy what we're trying to create in our community here. I'm just going to leave you with that, and hopefully you guys have a good evening. And remember, subscribe to our YouTube channel and have a great night. Thanks for watching, everybody. And listening.